ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Text number 30, chapter 3, canto 7.
Tum sapta tantum vitanosi tanva. Taya chatur hotraka vidjaya cha. Tum ekat bat bhavatam anadir. Ananta para kavir antaratma. Tum sapta tantum vitanosi tanva. Taya chatur hotraka vijaya cha. Tum ekat matma vatam anadir. Ananta para kavir antaratma.
Translation, please repeat. My dear Lord, by your form as the Vedas personified, and through knowledge relating to the activities of all the yajnik brahmanas, you spread the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of the seven kinds of sacrifices headed by Agni Stoma. Indeed, you inspire the yajnik brahmanas to perform the rituals mentioned in the three Vedas. Being the supreme soul, the super soul of all living entities, you are beginningless, endless, and omniscient, beyond the limits of time and space. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, the knowledge thereof, and the person who agrees to perform them are inspired by the Supreme Lord. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Mata Smritir Gyanam Apavanam Cha, from the Lord come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The Super Soul is situated in everyone's heart. Sarvasya Chaham Ridhi Shanivishta. Sarvasya Chaham Ridhi Shanivishta. Then another verse, Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Ridhish Arjuna Tishtati. And when one is advanced in Vedic knowledge, the Super Soul gives him directions. Acting as Super Soul, the Lord gives inspiration to a suitable person to perform the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. In this connection, four classes of priests known as Rikvik are required. They are mentioned as Hota, Advaryu, Brahma, and Udgata. I looked over a few of the verses, past and future, this morning. And something's been bothering me throughout this whole series of verses and purports and all. Lord Hiranyakashipu is glorifying Lord Brahma just as if he were Vishnu. Right? It's textbook glorification of Krishna. And of course, one understanding is that he's just really off. You know, he's just mistaken the wrong person, and he's exaggerating the glories of Lord Brahma, minimizing the glories of Lord Vishnu, which is what demons do. They exaggerate the qualities of mortals, and they de-emphasize the qualities of Krishna to sort of bring them down to the same plane. It's a function of envy, really. I mean, if you could describe the shortcomings of conditioned souls, it is that they exaggerate the glories of mortals, all the way from movie stars up to demigods, and they de-emphasize the glories of Lord Vishnu. That's how they become conditioned souls. So that's one way of looking at it. Hiranyakashipu is doing exactly that here. He's exaggerating the glories of Lord Brahma, and he's sort of missing Lord Vishnu. And that's offensive. It's offensive. If if the Prime Minister of India were to come to Maharashtra, Pratibha, right? Is that her name? Pratibha. Isn't it her name? Huh? Who's the Prime Minister? Okay, either one. They're both Singhs, right? If a Singh came from Delhi to Maharashtra, and you are welcoming her, everyone, please welcome the Chief Minister of Maharashtra, Pratibha Singh, Manmohan Singh, the best Chief Minister of Maharashtra we've ever had. Really good Chief Minister of Maharashtra. Once again, Pratibha Singh, let's hear it. Put your hands together for Manmohan Singh. They've been really good to Maharashtra. So you're glorifying them, aren't you? Aren't you? Yes, in one sense. But in another sense, you're also insulting them, isn't it? Isn't it? Because they're much bigger than Maharashtra. They're the Prime Minister and the President of India. So if they arrive in Maharashtra and you just describe them as the governor of Maharashtra, the chief minister of Maharashtra, then you've actually de-emphasized their importance, and it becomes insulting. Am I not right? Am I not right? So that's one way of understanding it, that Hiranyakashipu. And then if you introduce the chief minister of Maharashtra, I don't know the name. Oh, you don't know. That's right. You're not political. So it's okay. I shouldn't even ask. Whoever it is. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Prime Minister of India. Let's give a big hand for the Prime Minister of India, the person who's in charge of Tamil Nadu, Bengal, Bihar, Karnataka, Andhra, Madhya, Uttar Pradesh, and all like that. Then you also commit another offense because you've exaggerated the importance of the Prime Minister of Maharashtra. You've de-emphasized the importance of the federal people and you've overemphasized the importance of the local people. So that's certainly an interpretation here, that Hiranyakashipu is doing that, which is what conditioned souls and people who are not established in knowledge do. It's perennial. It's across the boards. But you know, something that's just sort of piqued me is that in the purports, Prabhupada doesn't seem to take that tact. There may be some verses beyond what I looked, but in the three or four verses I looked at, Hiranyakashipu describes Lord Brahma as the super soul and the heart of all living beings and omniscient. And in the purport, Prabhupada just quotes the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya Chamriti Chanivisha. He never says that Hiranyakashipu has made a wrong statement here. I mean, maybe beyond where I just glanced, he does, but I didn't see it in any of four or five purports. It's almost as if Prabhupada is taking it to just substitute Brahma for Vishnu or Krishna. He's just taking it as normal. And then what really struck me this morning was just before Hiranyakashipu asked for his benedictions, he concludes his prayers, his glorification, and it says Lord Brahma is pleased. So I'm thinking, what am I missing here? What am I missing here? Prabhupada takes this as perfectly normal. It doesn't even comment on it. Lord Brahma, he's got all this exaggerated praise. You know, it's like if you were to say the chief minister of, if you were to say the chief minister of Maharashtra, he's the prime minister, he's been a great governor of India, and that would be off. But what would really be off if he's just sitting there, yep, nail in the head, yep, I've done all that. Wouldn't that be strange if he reacted in that way? If he didn't protest? No, wait a minute, you've got the wrong person. I'm just a servant of the Prime Minister of India, the government. If he were to just sit there and accept all that as his or her due, wouldn't that seem really strange? So it seems strange to me that Lord Brahma was satisfied with the prayers, when obviously they're describing someone much greater than him. So what do you think? One interpretation, which may not meet universal acclaim, here Hiranyakashipu glorifies Lord Brahma, Krishna, as the super soul in all hearts. Sarvasyatam riti shanivishto matashmitya gyanamaponam. Vedascha sarvayahameva veda, vedanta krid veda grid eva chaham. that I am the goal of the Vedas, I'm the compiler of the Vedas, and that by the Vedas I am to be known. And here all the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are described. So did you know that in almost every ritualistic ceremony, Hiranyakashipu is glorified? You know that? Did you know that? Yeah. The one of the first things you do in any puja, Pura Dare Sriyaya Namaha, Jayaya Namaha, Vijayaya Namaha. Dwara Puja. You worship the doors of the temple. Dwara, Pura, Dare, the east door is the most auspicious. Deity is always looking east. So who are the guardians of the east door? On one side is Jai and the other side is Vijay. And we touch their feet. Jayaya Namaha, Vijaya Namaha. And the east door is the best. Then you go to the south door, Dakshina, Dore Namaha, Balayan, Prabhaya Namaha. You go to the west door, the Dakshina is south, then you go to the west door, yeah, Pakhima, Dore, Sriyaya Namaha, Badraya Namaha, Subhadraya Namaha, then Uta Dore Namaha, Chandrayana, Chandaya Namaha. But the best ones are the east door. Jaya and Vijaya. I don't know. Does anyone know which one Hiranyakashipu is? Whether he's Jaya or Vijaya? They're devotees. They're devotees. They're liberated souls. And what are the business of liberated souls? They're saying all these prayers constantly. You see, constantly. Especially in the more opulent Vaikuntha context. All these prayers are constantly being intoned and recited by all the residents of Vaikuntha. Aishwarya Samagate. The whole atmosphere is pervaded with awe and majesty and reverence. And Jaya and Vijaya are a big part of that. When the four Kumaras were barred entrance to Vaikuntha by them, and later they were cursed, they felt very great chagrin. We have done a wrong thing. We've done a wrong thing. We underestimated. Be careful. Underestimating the wrong people and underestimating the right people and overestimating the wrong people. They had underestimated the right people. That doesn't mean the underestimation process was right. And so they thought they'd done a great disservice. And Lord Vishnu came to the spot. And the first thing he did was, Jai, Vijay, you are my eternal servitor. You cannot do any wrong thing. You cannot do any wrong thing. Please, don't feel bad. He said, it was due to my arrangement. It's due to my arrangement. See, I wanted this. Just like you must wonder when Maharaj Parikshit went and he was a little thirsty. I mean, heck, devotees of the Lord are not bothered by a little thirst. Titikshava Karunika. Devotees of the Lord are not bothered by thirst. There's nirjala kadasi. You know? So they're trained not to be bothered by a little thirst. So did you wonder why he took offense that the sage didn't receive him and then garlanded him with a snake, thus incurring the wrath of his immature son and getting cursed to die within 7 days? So we think, how is a great devotee of the Lord guilty of such pettiness because of a little thirst? He insults a great... And the answer is, the Lord wanted it. The Lord orchestrated the whole thing. He's within the sarvasya chahamri. He's within the hearts of all living beings. So he wanted Maharaj Pariksha to be cursed so that his devotee could be glorified. I mean, look at the decision Maharaj Pariksha took during the last 7 days of his life. Look at the result. Look at the benefit throughout thousands and thousands of years and for millions and millions and millions of people. That's what the Lord does. He pushes his devotee forward to glorify him. So the Lord said to Jaya and Vijay, he said, really, don't feel bad. This is my arrangement. You know, I want you to go to the material world. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Lord says, it says that sometimes he gets tired of all the prayers of the Vedas and the awe and the majesty and the reverence with which he's treated. Everyone walking around on tiptoes and bowing down, you know, observing all the formalities and protocol and etiquette of a formal kingdom of God. And it says that he prefers the chastising words of Srimati Radharani to all the hymns of the Vedas. The supreme chastiser. Of course, in Christianity, that's pretty much who God is. He's the scorekeeper up there. You know, one sin, one good deed, three sins, you know, like that. You know, he gets tired of that. And he likes to be chastised, but not. It says that you can ignore glorifying an ordinary person. Like, for instance, if you don't glorify the demigods, there's no sin incurred. And when Nanda Maharaj did not continue the annual worship of Indra, he did not incur any sin. He did not incur any sin. But if he would have continued to resist and refuse Krishna's pleas to worship Govardhan Hill and the cow, then he would have been thoroughly condemned. Which, of course, he didn't. Krishna asked Maharaj Yudhisthira on the Kurukshetra warfield to tell a lie. Ashwatthama is dead. Yudhisthira balked. He'd never told a lie in his life. And when Krishna asked him to tell a lie, shout out, Ashwatthama is dead, he balked, and for that he had to see hell. For that he had to see hell. Because he balked. He hesitated to follow through on the suggestions of Krishna. So no ordinary person can contend with the Lord. And the Lord doesn't want to contend with ordinary people. He loves his devotees. We talked yesterday about how all the conditioned souls, this material conditioned world, this world of samsara, he maintains it. And he even comes here. He makes the scriptures available at every time, place and circumstances. The parampara, the disciplic session. He does his full duty with enthusiasm and vigor to try and get us to change our ways and go back to home, back to Godhead. But having said that, his real business is with those that have already done it, the Nitya Siddhas. That's his real business. Sometimes worldly people, you know, they take time off of their maintenance of their family and their pound, shilling and pence, and they think, I will visit the temple. I'll take some time out from my real business and I will visit the temple. I will grace the temple with my presence. See, for a few minutes this week. Yeah. You see, my real business is in this samsara. You see, but I will take some time out from my real business and I will come and get darshan of Sri Radha Gopinath. Actually, the real business is getting darshan of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. That's our real constitutional, eternal business. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhu Karunai. And our business is to attract them more and more and more and more. You are a great man. You have so much bank balance. And you're doing such a good job of maintaining your family. So all that's taken care of. Why are you bothering yourself? Come more often. Take prasadam, have some chaturmita, sit down, stay another 5-10 minutes, take a book with you, here's some prasadam. And eventually as they become purified, they'll realize what the real business is. The real business is to go back home, back to Godhead. And quit this material world. We do not have any business here. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said it's no place for a gentleman. It's no place for a gentleman. We need to quit this material world. So the Lord said to his servants, I want you to take birth. I want you to take birth as demons in the material world so that I can enjoy fighting with you. So here is, I don't know which one it is, Jai or Vijay, in the guise of Hiranyakashipu. And he's obviously in some kind of maya, obviously. On one level, he's very inimical towards Vishnu. On another level, he's thinking of him all the time, constantly. Narada Muni has a few verses where he envies the demons because their meditation on the Lord is unbroken. It's not ideal. We want to love the Lord in an unbroken, uninterrupted way. But it is unbroken. And Narada Muni sometimes says, well, they're fortunate because they're always thinking of the Lord in that way. So Hiranyakashipu is under some kind of an illusion, some kind of maya, but he is an eternal servant of the Lord. He is doing the business of the Lord. And so when he comes before Lord Brahma, some or other, the prayers that come out of his mouth are glorifying Vishnu, his eternal Lord and Master. Because that's pretty much all he knows. And that's pretty much what he's just been doing before he was sent here on a mission. And Prabhupada doesn't seem to raise an eyebrow at it. You know, he glorifies Lord Brahma, and then Prabhupada just talks about the super soul, quotes the Bhagavad Gita, and so on and so forth. And Lord Brahma himself describes himself as being satisfied at the conclusion of these prayers. So that's one way to look upon it. In Temple President's meeting in New Vrindavan a couple of years ago, the topic came up. This doesn't concern most of you as individuals, but as a temple, we often get requests from the Indian community to go out and do pujas, ritualistic ceremonies, just like Hiranyakashipu is describing here. And some of the temple presidents were against it, and some of the temple presidents were for it, and there was a debate. Should this be our business? And it shouldn't be most people's business. But should there be one or two people trained up in the temple to go out and do pujas? And some of the pujas might even be Ganesh puja, Lakshmi puja, so on and so forth. And so I advocated it. Because there is no, and on one level, there is no such thing as demigod worship. If you're a Krishna devotee, if you're Krishna conscious, you can't worship the demigods separate from Krishna. You can only worship the demigods as parts and parcels of Krishna. So you can get invited to someone's home. It's a chance to take Krishna to their home. It's a chance for you as a long-standing Krishna conscious person to go to someone's home. And you intone the mantras. Om Shuklam Bharadaram Vishnum Shashivanam Chatuvisham Pashana Varadam Sarvavigna Pashantye. That's the main Ganesh mantra. Om Shuklam Bharadaram Vishnum. It's the main mantra they use for Ganesh. And Ganesh is called Vigna Nasham, the remover of obstacles. Vignasham. But the real remover of obstacles is Krishna. Just like we said yesterday. The secondary, the immediate creator is Lord Brahma. The remote creator is Lord Krishna. So Ganesh has a reputation for removing obstacles, but without the sanction of Krishna, Ganesh can't do what he's famous for doing, removing obstacles. Purusha Shukta is used for it's a standard prayer for every worship. Ganesh, Lakshmi, whoever. Durga, Om Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sasaksa Sahasapat Sabumam Vishwato Vidra Achatishta Dishangalam. It is nothing more or less than a prayer to Lord Vishnu. That's all it is. So 90% of the prayers are prayers to Vishnu. Because that's where they get their power from. They get their power from Vishnu, just like Hiranyakashipu. He asked Prahlad, where do you get your power from? And Prahlad says, I get my power from the same place you do, from the same place he does and she does. Everyone, I get it from Lord Vishnu. That's where we get our power from. Yeah. And then, you're in these people's homes, you're chanting the prayers to the demigods, which are mostly Vishnu prayers, and then you get a chance to give a talk, pravachan. You've got a captive audience. You're the priest. You're the priest. They've invited into their homes to purify their homes. And to chant the transcendental hymns of the Vedas. Vedas cha sarve aham eva vedyo. Vedanta krit veda vid eva chaham. So you get to give a talk. This is funny. I have a reputation for doing pujas. And as I've explained the last few days, I'm sure you all understand that in an area like Spanish Fork, Utah, you have to extend yourself to a lot of different groups and people that you normally wouldn't necessarily have to do where you have a bigger population. But that even this was stretching a little bit. I got a call a couple years ago from the Bengali Association, University of Utah. Can you come and do Durga Puja for us in October? They had had a priest, Meenal Chakravarti, but he moved. He got a job somewhere else. I said, I'm a Vaishnav. You know that, right? You know I'm a Vaishnav. I mean, you know, it's the Sri Sri Radha Krishna Temple. You picked up on that, right? Yeah, we know that. We know all that. And we know that, you know. And I said, I normally do Vishnu Pujas, Krishna Pujas, and sometimes I'll do others, but I've never done a Durga Puja, and I'm not sure I want to start. And they said, please, 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 please. You know, they said, at Durga Puja, all the food is cooked without onions and garlic, pure vegetarian food, and so on and so forth. So put aside any reservations you have about that. And you can give any sort of a lecture you want, any sort of a lecture you want. There'll be 150 people there. I'm saying, we'll give a donation to the temple of $251. Where and when did you say it would be? So I went. And Shristi, Stiti, Pralaya, Shadana Shaktireka, Chayeva Yasha, Bhavanani Bibharti Durge, Chanarupam Pityasha, Chatesha Chesha, Govindam Maripurusham, Tamahang Bajami. She's, Durga represents nature. She's like what the Westerners call Mother Nature. And Prabhupada said, whose nature? Whose nature is Mother Nature? Krishna. Krishna. Prabhupada said, pregnant lady walks in the room, very obviously in the later stages of pregnancy, and you, oh, congratulations, when's your due date, so on and so forth. Who's the father? No father. Did it myself. Would you believe that? Is that credible? Would you believe that even for a moment? No, there has to have been a father. There cannot be Atma impregnation. There has to have been a father. So if they say nature, if you talk about Durga and the powers of Durga and how powerful she is, you know, in Bengal, my gosh, the whole state in October just prostrates itself for Durga, 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 Durga. And she is. She's so powerful. Durga. Ga means to go and Dur means tough. So she's the principle of friction. She's the reason that if you want to do something, you have an idea in mind and you have a goal. It takes planning. It takes organization. It takes resources. It takes time. And ultimately, it takes the sanction of Krishna. That's all called friction. There is a lag between the conception of an idea and its execution. And most times it never gets executed because all those favorable factors do not come into play. And even if all the other factors are there, the resources, the energy, if Krishna doesn't want it, then it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So whose nature, whose mistress is Durga? You see, Krishna's mistress. So as far as I was concerned, it was a Krishna conscious program. And even though the prasadam didn't have any onion and garlic, I still didn't take any. Is the Krishna conscious program. So here, Hiranyakashipu is accrediting Vishnu with originating the Vedic rituals by which people can become purified. It is a valid way of becoming purified, although it's not particularly effective in this day and age. You know, it's nice for the householders. They have a new house. There's 10 samskaras to perform on behalf of the children, including the samskara for conception. And when that Garbhadan samskara is initiated, when it's in place, people are going to conceive God-conscious children when that's observed. The souls that are going to be attracted to the parents who do Garbhadan samskara and are conscious of the Lord on the day of conception are going to be very exalted souls. Or Prabhupada says, and or you can chant 50 rounds on that day. That's even better. That's even better. Do both. Get a super excellent sub-se acha soul like that. So there's no harm in doing those. In fact, it's good. It gives some cohesion to our overall society. Brahmacharis don't have to be particularly concerned with this. You know. But have kirtan also. Have the samskaras. Have the kirtan. Glorify Krishna. There's only benefit from these ceremonies. However, we know that the Vedic ceremonies in and of themselves, the effect is much less in Kali Yuga. If you want a ceremony, if you want a ritual, if you want a yajna, Kritiya Dayato Vishnu, in the first age, people could meditate. That was the prescription for freedom from the cycle of birth and death. In the Satya Yuga, could meditate. Valmiki, in that age, people lived for 100,000 years. Valmiki dedicated 3/5 of his lifespan for meditation, and he got perfection. In the Satyuga age, the souls that come from the spiritual world, they realize very quickly they made a mistake. They sit down, they meditate, they do what it takes, and they go right back to home, back to Godhead. It's like there's one commercial in America. This may be a crude example. I'm sorry. I'm not the most polished of devotees. But there's a commercial in America where in an airport, a lady goes into a restroom and she's trying to get a speck out of her eye. She's looking in the mirror and trying to get a speck out of her eye. And a man comes. A man comes on this side. And he's kind of looking at her. And then another man comes around on this side. And he's kind of looking at her. And she's looking at this man. And she's looking at this man. And she says, it's like, okay, I had a speck in my eye. I thought I was in the ladies' room. But I guess I took the wrong door. Okay, let me just back out. Sorry, guys. I'm out of here. So the souls that come here in Satya Yuga, okay. Okay, this isn't, you know, this isn't the spiritual world. What's wrong here? Something off kilter here. Okay. I'm just going to sit here until I get back. You know, I made a wrong turn, but we're going to rectify that, you know, right away. Sorry for the crude metaphor. In the next age, Mecca, the holy place used to be called Makkah, and I think they even went back. It was a great Vedic center for sacrifice. They don't even know it, but that's why it's holy. Because before their memory, before their prophet, in a worldwide global Vedic culture, it was a Makkah, a great place where sacrifices were performed. And during the Treta Yuga age, there were such wealth and such resources that when the Brahmins in the four different categories here came and chanted the Vedas exactly with the right shraddhas and accents, and the kings gave the dakshin in backs of elephants and horses, gold coins as dakshina. And when the vaishyas, as the mercantile interests, and the sudras provided the grains and the fruits and the samagri in huge quantities, and the ghee, when all the citizens of the country or state participated in the execution of a sacrifice, you know what the result would be? Vishnu would come on Garuda. For the Purnahuti, Vishnu would come on Garuda and accept the offerings. And everyone would be self-realized. That was the result of the sacrifice. And then Dvaipaye Parichayayam Achana, deity worship, was the recommended process in the next age, the Dwarpa age. And you know, we see vestiges of temples from the Vijayanagara Empire, Hampi and places like that. Temples that are 1,200 years old. The Nisringamurti must have been incredible. But don't forget, this was still only 500 years ago. These are the temples that were built 500, 600, 700 years ago, 1,000 years ago, maximum 2,000 years ago. Can you imagine what the temples were 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 years ago? Angkor Wat now is becoming a major tourist attraction all over the world. It's like incomprehensible. That's the biggest Vishnu temple in the world. And that was still in Kali Yuga. Can you imagine what the temples were like in Dwarpa Yuga age? Of such a nature that just by participating you get liberation. Pritiyadayato, Tritiyajita, Dorpaya Parachar, Kalotad Hari Kirtana. Kalotad Hari Kirtana. These are all nice things. It's like medicine is nice, but you have to take the medicine according to the prescription. In the Kali Yuga age, each and every purpose, Vedashu Yagishu Tapasu Chaiva, Danashu Yat Punya Falam Padisham, Atyeti Tat Savamiditam, Yogi Param Shtanam Apayati Chajam. In Bhagavad Gita, it says, there is no purpose, there is no purpose fulfilled by the Vedas, Vedashu, Yagishu. There is no purpose fulfilled by Yagyas, Tapashu, there is Tapasya. There is no purpose fulfilled by Tapasya, Vedashu, Yagyasu, Tapasya, Chaiva, Danashu. There is no purpose fulfilled by giving away in charity, lavishly, even thousands of gold coins. Danashu, yet. There's one more. Vedashu, Yagyasu, Tapasya, Chaiva, Danashu, yet. Punya, punya, piety. There is no purpose which is not fulfilled by doing karma kanda and upanishana, accumulating mountains of pious activity, which is not served automatically and effortlessly, almost as a byproduct, kalotad Hari Kirtana, by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare. So please forgive me if I've talked about a lot of things, some of which have to do with householder life and this and that and the other thing. But rest assured that you're perfectly situated to go back to home, back to Godhead, from where you're sitting right now. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Other questions or comments? Maharaj can tell if I've done something wrong, said something wrong.
Thank you, Prabhu. Before the class started, you were reciting some verses. Can you explain them? I never heard those
words. Which ones?
After the Nigama Kalpa Galitam.
Mukham Kavidakare, An Shabara Shmarane, Pangu Giralanga, Andade Katarigane. Same thing. Dumb man can speak. A lame man can walk, blind man can see star. Mukas, yan shabara shmarane, an idiot can remember, shmarane, great poetry, pangu girilanga, a lame man, someone who's fallen can walk with the stick of support of the guru, like that. And then the same thing, that's the second verse, Durgame, that's by Krishnadas Kaviraj. Durgame pati, my doing it, Durgame pati me andasha. Krishnadas Kaviraj says, Durgame, my way is very difficult. Like we said, Durgame. He's an old man, 93, 4 years old. Anda, he's blind. He can hardly walk. Durgame pati me andasha. Skalad pate gater mahu. Skalad pate gater mahu. Swak kripa. Kripa yasti danena. Kripa means mercy. Mercy. He says, I could not be writing this Chaitanya Charitamrita unless I had the stick, the crutch of the Rupa Raghunath's mercy. Otherwise, what can I do? I'm totally incapable. But with the kripaya, you see, swakripa yasidanana, santu santu valambanam, by the mercy of my Guru's Rupa, I'm able to do what I'm doing. Is that right? Anything else? Can you use the microphone?
Hare Krishna. All our Goswamis, Acharyas, Radhanath Maharaji, all the sannyasis, all the self-realized souls, they're liberated souls, right? And when they are born here in the material world, they take birth in the body of a man. So my question is that a woman is inferior, right, to a man due to because of whatever karma.
Oh, we're not
because
women
they all take up the body of a man.
What's so great about the body of a man? If taking birth in the body of a man made you liberated, then all men would be liberated. And if taking birth in the body of a woman meant you couldn't be liberated, no woman would be liberated. But there are many women who are liberated, and there are many men who are not liberated. So why make the distinction? We don't make the distinction. I mean, we don't. I don't know why it's bothersome, because our, of all the different cultures in the world, ours is the one that really, on a spiritual level, doesn't make any distinction between a man and a woman. And you'll find huge segments of the scriptures glorifying the woman as in many ways superior to the man. Pain of bearing child and the nurturing and the love, the role of the mother to raise the children. When Arjuna's not really so much worried about killing the men as leaving the women as widows. You see what I'm saying? That's his main objection. The soldiers are going to be killed, but that's they buy into that. You know, they know that. But I don't want to leave the women in harsh circumstances. And Yudhisthira's main lamentation after the Kurukshetra War was just see all the women I've made widow and the children I've made orphans. Did you know that the term better half, Ada, is a Sanskrit term? Yeah, it comes from Sanskrit. There's a verse by one saint. He says, I would not strike even with a flower, a woman guilty of 100 faults. So I'm not sure why this comes up all the time. I mean, there's plenty of criticism of men, and we never get any question, does the Bhagavatam think that men is an inferior birth? Well, it is, but so any birth, any body of kap, pita, vayu is inferior. Not, you know. Let's worry about that. Let's not worry about the bag of kap, pitu, vayu has one or more or less chromosome. Let's worry about the fact that we're all in these bags, try and get out of them. Can we concentrate our energies in that way? Huh?
No, we know that we're not this body, right? So, I mean, the question of I, or whether I'm an Indian or an American or man or woman, it doesn't matter. But this is what I felt, so I wanted to ask.
Are you treated in a way to make you think you're inferior?
No, no. No, everybody loves me.
I can cite my wife as an example. I mean, she built a beautiful temple. She built temples in Melbourne. She built temples in London. She's very happy. I make the money and she spends it. Sometimes she complains and I say, you know, I'd rather be you. You make the money and I'll spend it. That'd be more fun. But no, actually, I enjoy what I do as a man, and she enjoys what she does as a woman. But we both do really is to serve Krishna according to our talents and capacities. So don't think that way. It's not our philosophy. You're not treated that way. So there's no reason to think that way. Any other questions? I guess the class ends at 9:15, so maybe two more minutes, is it?
In your preaching efforts at Utah, you preach in a place where 90% are Mormons.
Exactly. They actually did a survey. In the valley we live, 88% are Mormons.
So
and there are 6 Indian families in the valley we live. 6 to 7.
So being a very conservative community,
So for them to take up to Krishna consciousness fully is very difficult. So you are creating well-wishers there. So sometimes we also face similar situations. So my question is, suppose some Mormon genuinely wants to take up to full Krishna consciousness, and if he takes up to full Krishna consciousness, then you might end up creating enemies in the community. They may not remain well-wishers. So how do you go about it?
A few people have become from Mormon families, and one of our main kirtan leaders, Jai Krishna, when he came to India with me in 2003, he led the Bangalore Rath Yatra for about 4 hours in kirtan. They liked him. And his whole family is staunch Mormons. His aunt is a famous Mormon poetess, Janice Perry. Every member of his family for 4 or 5 generations, every male and female member has gone on a mission for 2 years. And he was the first one that didn't go on a mission. And they were horrified. I mean, they got him. They had the bishop, the stake president, and all of them talking to him. They had him in a corner. And he's very mild. He's very sweet. He's very happy in his religion. He doesn't try to push it on other people. He just tells us, you know, and even his wife, she was also practicing Mormonism and not coming to the temple. But he would tell them, I'm going to go to the temple no matter what, because I need it. I have to go to the temple. He teaches karate. He has a big, he has like hundreds of students. They win all the ribbons all over the state. He's the most famous karate teacher. And he keeps it a little low profile. But he tells them, I have to go to this temple every Sunday. I must go because I can't do what I do so well unless I get my Sunday at the temple. So then they start coming. Now they're all devotees, his wife, 3 daughters and son and so on and so forth. And then even when we opened the temple in 2001, he was leading the kirtan. 5 television stations covered it. So he came out of the closet. He had to. It's like, there he is, you know. And, well, that's my karate teacher, you know. But he only lost one student. And he tells me, I don't have the experience because I don't have that background, but he tells me that when he's giving a tour and he mentions that he was a Mormon, there's a little bit of discomfort. There's just that little bit of, well, why did you leave? Well, why did you leave, you know? You know, there's like, why did you leave, you know? But fortunately, the number of devotees that we've made is very few. So it's not a number that they would feel threatened. I tell people, in case I'm in a situation where I think that's on some people's minds, when I think that that's an impediment to their hearing, like when there's a big festival crowd or something like that, and I feel that this situation needs to be addressed in such a way as to defuse it, I say, look, we've been here 20 years, and we've only made, you know, maybe a handful of converts. So either we're proselytizing really heavily and we're awfully bad at it, or we're not proselytizing at all. So either way, you have nothing really to worry about, you know. We're either trying hard and we're just really bad. We're not very good at it, or else we're really not trying. And it's a good application of the principle, less is more. Less is more. You know, we know that if we push, it'll be much more counterproductive than if we don't push. And by not pushing, we've gained the respect of people. They'll send their high school kids on field trips, their college classes. The little toddlers come on field trips. Everyone, it's a big thing. Send the kids to the Krishna temple so they can have an enriching, expanding experience. And they trust us not to pressure them. They trust us. And as a result of having that reputation, we've got more people crossing our threshold than we know what to do with. We're just like constantly busy all the time. I mean, I'm here in India and you're saying, what's he talking about? Well, January is a slow month because there's snow and there's no festivals. But when I go back, you know, I'm just going to have to hit the ground running because it's just, All kinds of people come to us, and in large part because they're not afraid of us. They trust us to respect them and what they're doing, and they respect us and what we're doing. And we do make devotees. I mean, we probably make the same number of devotees any temple does, like 2 a year in America. And then the devotees we make, they go, when in October, they go south. They usually go to a warmer place like San Diego. I'd like to say we've sent a lot of devotees to San Diego, but the actual fact is a lot of devotees have gone to San Diego. Does that answer your question? Yeah, it's a delicate situation. So, thank you very much. I have to go tonight, which is probably why was asked to give the class today over such luminaries as Radhanath Maharaj and Jayadvaita Swami. But I've really enjoyed so much my time here. I haven't ever been in a temple where such warm hospitality has been extended to me, where I've felt so much welcomed. And this temple is really what we talk about. You know, we distribute books and we talk about Vaishnava culture and Vaishnava etiquette, and in so many ways we have yet to develop on many fronts. But this temple is as close to the perfection, the ideal of a Vaishnava society as I've ever experienced. And I will always be so grateful to you all for that, for giving me that. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Radhanath Swami Ki Jai.
Jai.